Great. So we are now recording this call. Thanks everybody for joining us today. My name is Nettie Lagasse. I'm the Associate Executive Director at NYSO. I manage the different working groups and projects, and one of the projects is what we will be talking about today, the content platform migrations work. And we have Athena Heppner and Tom Beyer with us today to talk about that. So the format for these calls, if you have not joined any so far, we do have them every month, or we try to have them every month, except for the summer. The format is really informal. It's not even as formal as any conference presentation in person or virtual. It's meant just to be a conversation about the project with the people who are working on it, and also allow the people in the audience, that's you, to join in, ask questions, and find out what's going on. So that's the sense of it. We'll be having a conversation, and you're welcome to interrupt if you want. I don't have any problem with that. I don't think Athena and Tom do either. The only thing I would say is if you are not on mute, or if you're not speaking, try to keep your phone or your device on mute if you are not speaking, so that background noise doesn't creep in. But if you're happy to talk, then we're happy to hear from you too. So we're going to be talking about the content platform migrations for a little while, and also inviting comments and reactions from all of you. And there will be so we are recording the call. But there will be a time in the call where I will shut off the recording. So if you have any question or anything you want to comment on, then you don't want to be recorded, there will be an opportunity to do that as well. And then the last part of the call is I'll see if anyone has any questions or anything general to ask about NYSO. And that's also welcome on this call as well. So that's my little introduction. And thanks again for joining us. And I will start talking about content platform migration. So thanks, Athena and Tom, again. Could you maybe each of you introduce yourselves and say what you do at your institution, and maybe a little bit about how it connects to content migrations? Tom, you're first alphabetically.
Sure.
My last name.
Okay.
Introduce yourself. Thank you.
I will. So I'm Tom Beyer. I'm the Director of Platform Services at KGL Pub Factory. We host many different publishers, book and journal collections on the platform. And my role at the company is really to talk to prospects and to talk to current clients as well about what the platform is capable of and how best to make use of it. So I do sort of talk a lot to prospects, and I get quite involved in the actual migration process, and the, you know, when we're bringing new publishers on board to make sure that they're making the best use possible of the platform.
Great. Thanks, Tom. Athena, what do you do and how are you connected?
I am a Discovery Services Librarian at the University of Central Florida. We're a relatively large academic library and a very large academic institution. So we experience a lot of migrations from the library end user perspective. So we get notices from various publishers and platforms saying this journal package is moving onto this different platform. And it can be journal packages or specialized databases or ebook package that has been bought and is going to, you know, it's merged from one company to another. So it's going to be on a new platform. So we see a variety of types of migrations that we need to respond to in one way or another. At least we need to make sure that our linking is accurate and up to date. So that's my starting point. I don't know if you want me to get into more detail, but that's my main role in migrations.
That's pretty good. So when I sent out the invitation for the call, I had a little blurb about what the content platform migrations work is, and it's basically a recommended practice. The working group is working on a recommended practice that will provide recommendations about particularly communications when content moves from one platform provider to another provider. It affects a lot of people, a lot of stakeholders, a lot of work. So the reason for the project is to make that work easier and the communications more easy. So I just wanted to give a short update on the status of the work. The working group's been working for some time now, putting it together, and Tom and Athena will talk about that. It went through a public comment period earlier this year, and the group has spent the summer working through the comments and making changes to the draft document. And it's now pretty much complete. The only things left are to send it to our external editor, which I didn't do on Friday. I will do today and finish that up. And then we'll be approving it and releasing it for publication. So it's pretty close to being available, which is a really exciting thing. So congratulations, Tom and Athena, on behalf of the group. So maybe we can talk a little bit about what's in it. And how it's come together. Why did Athena? You were one of, if I recall correctly, you were one of the original creators of the work item, which became the project.
That's correct.
What was the impetus, or why? What got into your? What was the bee in your bonnet that you wanted to tackle?
Well, I as I mentioned, I'm one of the librarians on the receiving end of messages about the migrations that are going to happen or that have happened. And prior to starting this group, I had seen a whole bunch, and some publishers would reach out for feedback and advice, and others would not. And we would see migrations that worked relatively well and others that had a lot of hitches, like, oh, they didn't think about this link needs to actually be able to work with the authentication systems that most libraries use, or they didn't think to go and tell the discovery provider, like the EBSCO Discovery Service or Summon or Primo, that the knowledge base needs to be updated by this time. Otherwise, all of these links to articles in that old platform are now going to break. So we saw a lot of variation on whether it worked really well or whether there were problems. And then I was talking about that with the other people on the Information Policy and Analysis Committee that has publishers and content providers and platform providers and a bunch of representatives from different aspect or stakeholders or points in the industry.
Yeah, just to drop in, this is one of NISO's topic committees, which are leadership groups, and they meet monthly to review projects and also look at the landscape and determine what kinds of things NISO should be working on. So that was that conversation. Yeah, go on.
It was interesting. No, it's good. I appreciate you throwing in some context for people. It was interesting to hear that they also had some of the same desires for more guidance and more consistency. And it's like one of the people on the group said, it would have been great if we had this a year ago when we started this process, if we'd had some sort of checklist of this is what we should think about, this is how we should communicate it, this is the timing. So that really started, that was the impetus for starting the project. And from there, I started drafting the work item. And I did talk to other librarians, send out an email to the e-resources in libraries discussion list and said, hey, how many of these migrations are you seeing? And it was a lot. People were seeing, I think we counted something like, I'm bad at numbers off the top of my head, but if I remember right, it was something like 19 migrations that people reported over the span of a year, just as an informal survey from that list.
That sounds about right.
So that was the impetus.
Yeah, good. So we got it rolling. Athena and a few others created the proposal. It was approved by the topic committee and the NISO members, and then we started putting the working group together. So working groups are always made up of stakeholders, because we believe, and I think it's proven that involving the stakeholders makes the best solutions. So who are the stakeholders in the process, and why you are both stakeholders And then why did you want to participate? Tom, maybe you could start with why you wanted to participate and the stakeholders that you've been working with on the group.
Sure, sure. So as a platform, you know, we certainly are involved in a fair number of migrations. It's something that requires a fair amount of collaboration. I mean, there's a lot of data that we need to get from the old platform. And it's really, really helpful if the group that had the platform before works well with us. The other thing is that when we are working with our publishers, any single publisher doesn't necessarily do a platform migration on a very frequent basis. So we were in a position of sort of having to develop some of these materials ourselves to help coach our publishers through the process and all the things that they needed to think about. But what was interesting to me was getting on this group and realizing A, that librarians are on the receiving end of so many more of these migrations than even, you know, we're part of. And also that they vary a lot because it's, you know, different kinds of platforms. So it was really interesting to see that wider perspective. But from my point of view, it just, I knew that, you know, we've had migrations that have gone really well and not so well. And if we all sort of have a standard set of recommendations to adhere to, it would help us all.
Yeah. And so Athena, you're a librarian, as you said. What other stakeholders are represented on the working group?
Let's see, we have librarians, publishers that are, you know, basically content creators who then use some platform to distribute their content, platform providers. I'm really bad at this, and yeah, I apologize.
I'm looking too. So there's publishers, platform providers.
I'm trying to recall.
People who maintain data about publications. So mm-hmm. Bowker. Primary publishers.
We have more stakeholders than could be represented on the group, unfortunately.
That's true.
But I think we got the ones that are most likely to be involved in doing the migration work rather than, okay, I need to send out a communication to these other stakeholders and they're going to be doing some related work, but it's not the core, you know, migration tasks.
And then I think the other stakeholders provided input during the public comment period too, so that.
Yes. There are other stakeholders. I'm looking at the draft right now. Some of the stakeholders would be the publishers, content platform vendors, library consortia, and then library solutions providers is the term we came up to sort of group a lot of other stakeholders under. So they might be people who are providing statistics service, or they might be usage statistic, I just said that when I'm reading the same thing twice, preservation services, discovery services, knowledge base and metadata providers, and then people who help with processing data as part of a migration or others use of that data. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different types of vendors that may be interested or involved, but we lumped them under library solutions providers.
Yeah, good. So then talking about the actual document, you organized it in a particular kind of way. There's a section called continuous access, a section called content migration, one called metadata migration, and so on. Would either of you be willing to talk about how you came to determine this particular outline? And why you thought that might work best for this material.
Yeah.
Who would like to jump in?
I don't know if you remember the exact conversation, but it sort of came out that, you know, making sure that people have users have access to the content through the transition is really the paramount thing that we're trying to ensure, that the content is, you know, every bit as discoverable the day after the migration as it was the day before. And so that became sort of the first section. And then I think the succeeding sessions really just were looking at all of the various aspects of the problem, you know, how, you know, moving the content, moving the metadata, moving accounts and subscriptions, and so on. But I think one of the things I liked about the organization we came up with was just trying to like focus everybody on the paramount importance of trying to keep access, you know, as undisturbed as possible through the migration.
Yeah, I would say that from my perspective, it sort of grew organically out of our conversations and our investigations into the needs and what existed and so forth. And the section one is the introduction, obviously, and then section two, continuous access, linking to content, redirects, resolvers, and authentication, speaks to exactly what Tom was talking about. And that was really my starting point. And I think, as he indicated, the focus of a lot of this whole document. But then the last section before the appendices is section seven, communication. And that really was also, that was, I'd say, the second thing that was talked about early on was, okay, we need to make sure that the links work and we need to have the communication among the stakeholders so that they're all coordinating and keep the links working. But the other sections sort of, a lot of them grew out of our initial investigations where we were trying to say, what are the related standards? Who are the stakeholders and what are their needs? So we have a section on within continuous access. We talk about DOI and Crossref. So that's we need to have Crossref as a stakeholder that's communicated to, and how does all that happen? But then things like, there's a section on content migration that really gets into it for the platform providers and how they're going to talk to publishers and that sort of thing. It really grew out of our investigations and conversations, but that may be more my perspective. Other people may be thought of it as more structured from the beginning.
Okay. So, I mean, when you said communications, is also really is, you know, the next most important thing. And then you said it's section seven. I was like, well, how can it be at the end of the document? But then maybe it makes more sense to say, well, you have all these other things that you need to communicate about. So you need to know what those are.
Right. We at first communication was going to be a subsection in each other section. And then We realized it was sort of redundant. We were repeating, you need to communicate this to these people a lot. Yeah. So we sort of consolidated it into its own section, and that ended up at the end, but it doesn't mean it's the least important. Yeah. They're all important. And they just, we tried to also think about it in terms of who is going to be doing what. So if I'm coming in and I'm just someone who's dealing with usage statistics, I can go to section six and read about that. And then it maybe will lead me, you know, I may need to look at other sections as well. But that way I don't have to try and really absorb everything in order to absorb and use what I need to focus on for what I need to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anything else about the organization of the document that you want to touch on? Go ahead.
We have various appendices, so where we really get into some of the nitty-gritty on different things and give examples. And there's appendices for mailing lists that might be helpful. And then the most significant appendice, I think, is Appendix F, which is the checklist. I'm going to not get into that right now unless you want me to.
That was my next question, because I think the checklist is a really nice tool and was one of the major, things that you all talked about right off the bat. as something that would help users of the recommended practice. So you can talk about it later if you want, but we are going to talk about it. So when you want to talk about it is up to you.
Well, I'll give a little introduction, and then if Tom wants to say more, that's cool. The checklist, what the idea was that this is a document that is a working tool for people. It's not just, read it and learn something and then set it aside. It's, okay, I'm going through a migration right now. What are the things that I need to think about and make sure it happen? So the narrative document sort of explains things, and each section then includes sort of a summary of what's going on and some key points, and then recommendations for different stakeholders as bullet points. We took those recommendations and we put them into a checklist form as well. And it's a spreadsheet that you can then filter and sort. So you can say, I'm looking for pre-migration recommendations about communication. And here they are. And it say, and this is the set of communications that would typically come from a publisher or typically go to external stakeholders like the library. I've already forgotten the term I said earlier, the external service providers.
Library service providers.
Thank you. Yes. So you can really filter in and see different parts of it that are relevant to what you're trying to do, what your task is, and who you're trying to outreach to. So I hope that it will be an extremely functional tool that a lot of different people can use as they're facing or a migration that they're initiating or that they're on the receiving end of.
Yeah, I thought that was what was really cool about the checklist, was that it's one thing to be able to read through the document and get sort of an overview of the whole thing, and even to the level of, you know, the recommendations that we have in the different sections. But the checklist makes it a really functional tool, and the ability to be able to filter both your role, but also where you are in the process, I think makes it really powerful. I thought that was a really great idea.
And customize it for, you know, download and customize it for one's own purposes.
Yeah, exactly. Since it is an Excel document, you can download it and then, adjust it to your needs and your organization. Yeah.
Or if you have like project management expertise, you could put it into a Gantt chart or do whatever you want. It's got the information there that you might want to organize and disseminate. However you do that on Trello, whatever you use.
Yep, good. So we had a public comment period, which was pretty active, and I think provided some good input. Did either of you learn anything anything in particular from the public comment period, or what did you like about it, or can you provide some reactions about it?
Well, I was happy that that people overall seemed very appreciative, and the kinds of comments we got were really further explanation of certain things, or did you consider this, or, you know, what about that? And not sort of a, you know,
critical.
You guys are off. What are you talking about? So that was really nice. But and it was super helpful just to get further sort of validation on, but also like where things were confusing for people, or they needed more detail.
Athena, anything to add, or you disagree?
Yeah, I would say throughout the process, there's been things that have been aha moments, we didn't think of this, and why not? That seems really obvious now that someone made this suggestion. Why didn't we have a sentence on that? And there were some of those from the comments as well. They definitely had some nice editorial advice. It's like, you're using different terms for this thing throughout the document. Mm. Choose a term and stick with it. It's like, that's of course, we should do that.
So that's where library solutions providers came from then.
Yeah. And specifically mentioning library consortia rather than just assuming that people would know that they would sort of what we have recommended for libraries fits very broadly most of the time for library consortia too, and then maybe mentioning specific things that are the rules of the library consortia slightly differently or separately from the libraries where there is enough of a difference. So things like that. It was interesting going through the process because in a way it felt like we didn't get that many comments, but we also got a lot of recommendations for and comments to change. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, I think there were something like 13 or 14 different public commenters.
Yes.
Yeah. But each of them had different things that they were commenting on. So we broke them out and said, okay, this person has mentioned section 4.6, section 4.7, and then we would go through and try and address what they were talking about in each of those subsections. So
that you weren't dealing with one commenter who said one thing and another commenter who said mm-hmm. the total opposite. Yeah,
luckily we did not have to wrangle that. It seemed like there wasn't a lot of disagreement in the comments.
That's good. Good. And so we're tying that up, and that's one of my things is to all the working group put together the responses to the comments, and I will start sending out those to the people who commented. So if anyone on the call is a commenter, you will get a response back probably this week sometime. With how the working group tied up your comment, and then you'll see the document in the near future as we approve it. Tom and Athena, you were different stakeholders. Can you provide any comments about what you discovered about through the process working with each other and the other people on the working group? What perspectives or motivations became apparent that you might not have thought of? Or can you talk about the working group experience a little bit with the different stakeholders? Did some pieces of the conversations reinforce things you already knew about each other?
Tom, do you want to start with that or do you want me to?
Sure, I'll start. So our primary relationship during these migrations is with the publisher, the organization that we're working with. And so being on this group, it was really great to get a much deeper appreciation of what the librarians are going through on the receiving end. So that was pretty eye-opening. It was also interesting to hear about, we do a particular kind of migration because we have a particular kind of platform, but also to hear about, similar but different kinds of migrations that the librarians are also having to deal with. So, from my point of view, that was the most sort of edifying part of being on the group was getting that perspective of the broader sort of landscape out there.
Excellent. Fina?
From my perspective, it's just the migration has been a black box. It happens, right? Someone out there is doing something and then we see the results. And getting to peek into that black box a little was very interesting. My ears would perk up when the conversation would turn to what the publishers would do and what their tasks were versus what the platform providers are doing and what their tasks are, their portion of it. So I assumed that platform migration, I talk to the platform vendor. They're the ones, but so much of it apparently is driven by the publishers, which, I didn't know this. Mm-hmm. So who really has the decision power over, or power is not the right word, who is making the decisions about things at different points and who's communicating what was different than I would have guessed before I went into this process. So that was eye-opening. And then the parts that seemed easy to different stakeholders was also kind of fun. It's like, oh yeah, that's easy, I understand that. And it's like this other part is just completely transparent, or I'm sorry, opaque to me. Yes. And I don't know anything about it, and it's easy to someone else. So it was fun having the different expertise and knowledge areas on the group,
and hopefully making the whole thing more transparent to everyone through the recommendations. So cool. So I'm interested if anyone on the call has any questions for Athena or Tom about the content platform migrations working group that they have been participating in. We are welcome your comments or your questions or your suggestions or reactions or anything.
Hi, everybody. This is Letty Conrad calling in from Southern California. How are you? It's good to hear your voices.
It's great to hear you, too.
Hi, Letty.
Thanks for these updates. Hey, Tom. Hey, Athena. Thank you both for your work on this project. And I'm so glad to be getting up to speed. You know, I largely have my publisher consultant hat on, in particular around, you know, digital platform management and product development. And I've worked with publishers in the past around the communication, so it's going to be fantastic to have a checklist we can all point to. I wonder if you can tell me a bit about communication around URL changes in particular. One of the things that I've done with publishers a couple of times is create a kind of document that explains our URL structure for journal homepages used to look like this, and here's the mapping equivalent to the new platform, and sort of the same, you know, at the, you know, archive issue article level. Is that something that you're recommending as far as documenting the formulas around URL changes?
I can jump in and talk to this some. We do have an appendix about URLs and give some examples because that exact issue. We will sometimes on the receiving end, we'll have a crosswalk that's available. This URL is now this URL. Okay. It usually deals in the simple cases for URLs, for getting to, for instance, a whole journal or sometimes an article. But we sometimes end up with having to deal with more complicated URLs from the old system that are maybe permalinks, and trying to crosswalk that into a specific landing page can be difficult. So we have an appendix that sample URLs, and we talk about top level, the page where it's like the whole platform, and then the journal gateway where it's this is landing on a specific journal, the individual issues down to the articles, permalinks, vendor open URL links that are sometimes, you know, a vendor will have, okay, you can structure the metadata this way. We'll have an open URL link resolver that it will receive it and then take you to the content. Well, the new platform maybe doesn't have that. So how do we deal with that? We don't have solutions for all of these, but we list 11 different types of URLs that we hope that the platform providers and publishers will think about, at least be aware of when they're planning their migration. So I don't know if that's what you're talking about, or if you wanted to, if I missed the point.
Yeah, no, I think that's that crosswalk is exactly the term that I was forgetting. I was calling it mapping, but yeah, just you know, looking to publishers to document how those URLs will change. I don't know if Tom, if you know, are platform providers doing anything for publishers as far as helping with that kind of documentation?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly, we have to deal with it on both ends, right? One is to, you know, help our publishers communicate what the new URL structure will be. But it's also super important for us to understand the old structure, because inevitably, even with the best communication and even getting these crosswalk documents out to everybody, it's inevitable that a lot of people will be following links that ultimately, you know, resolve to the old platform. And so we need ways of making sure that we have redirects in place to get those people to the new platform. And perfect. Hopefully, you know, we can pull the old URL apart and get them to the right place in the new platform. And so, yeah, it's a super important part of the migration. And our document deals with it both on the URL level, but also on that sort of, you know, making sure you get the redirects in place and what you need to do to make that happen.
Another thing that we talk about as recommendations around URLs from the library perspective is those links that are out there, they can get really, really stale. When we were doing a migration, a different type of migration, going from one integrated library system to an updated version. So we were going from Aleph over to Alma. And they're both Ex Libris products. So, you know, it shouldn't be that complicated. But we were finding things. Some of our Springer URLs were like 15 years old, and they didn't have that same platform. They had a redirect in place that was still handling those old URLs in many cases. But we have recommendations in this document to prevent exactly this sort of thing where we're relying on a redirect indefinitely. And then if that platform, if that content migrates platforms two or three times, who is tracking that there's a 10-year-old, 15-year-old redirect? So we have to recommend to the librarians to keep up with it a little bit better too, so that it's not dealing with some sort of archaeological dig of redirects.
Yes. Perfect. I'm looking forward to the final document being out. Thank you guys very much for your work on this.
Great. Thanks, Liddy. Any other questions, comments, reactions? All right, then let me just stop the recording.